Well, I have the opportunity to share God's Word with you. It has a summer feel, if for no other reason. This morning, Kent is on vacation, and Aaron is with the young people and group on a summer missions trip, so we're clearly in that summer mode, and I trust that as summer activities unfold for all of you, that we will make sure that we keep Christ focused in our summer and allow Him to use us as we follow Him. Also, last night, I had the opportunity to be in a tremendous service. I was with the French ministry here, and there was a spirit of prayer that came over the meeting last night. And we just had an amazing time together, and we're trusting for many breakthroughs. We're grateful for that ministry within our church. John, our new children's pastor, spoke last Sunday. If you were here, you might be disappointed with me. I don't have the accent this morning. I'm sorry. And also, I don't have candy for you all either, which he offered. But we are in a series that is called Family Matters. And we've been in this series since Mother's Day, and we are concluding on Father's Day next Sunday. But we've looked at a number of different subjects related to the family, and today we look at the matter of marriage. When the great Chicago Cubs second baseman, Ryan Sandberg, was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame a few summers ago, he began a speech as smooth and fluid as one of his signature home runs. There came a memorable moment, though, however, when Sandberg lost his usual poise. Eyes welling up, lip trembling, Sandberg called his Hall of Fame induction the second best thing that had ever happened to him. He said, "My wife, Margaret, is the best thing that has ever happened to me." He said, "Margaret is my best friend. She is the love of my life. She is my salvation. She's my past, my present, my future. She's my sun, my moon, my stars. She's everything that's good about life. And I thank her for entering my life at a time when I needed her most." Wow. Over the course of 35 years of pastoral ministry, I have had the opportunity to perform the wedding of nearly 200 couples, just one last Thursday, the Arboretum there at the university. I can't think of single one of them when I first encountered them sitting in pre-marriage preparation sessions who did not have their eyes, have in their eyes the dream of building a marriage, something like Ryan Sandberg described. All of them began with a vision of having not just a surviving marriage, but a Hall of Fame marriage, one of the great marriages, the kind of friendship that brings out the best in each other, that helps each other rise above adversity, the kind of union that produces something even larger than the sum of its parts. The kind of bond that the grandchildren and neighbors and friends will look at and say, "Oh God, give me a relationship like that." Maybe you have been blessed with a union like this. Perhaps you find yourself longing at times for that quality connection. Maybe you haven't given much thought to how your relationship is trending. Or maybe you're not married at all. But that kind of Hall of Fame marriage relationship is often not the case. Marriages become difficult. Marriage can become hard. And love is strained. A marriage can be shaky. Sometimes one, or at times both, in a marriage, one of them or more of them just don't get it. Sometimes there's just that connection that's just not there, and we just don't get it. Legend has it that a couple came to see a certain pastor. Certainly not me. I want you to know that. Not me. But the man was particularly concerned about his wife. His wife had depression. And he had tried all that he knew to help her, but nothing worked. And so they came in, and the pastor couldn't do anything either. The lady, she was totally unresponsive. And after half an hour getting nowhere at all, the pastor, he jumped up and pulled the woman out of her chair. He put his arms around her and kissed her. And he turned to the husband and he said, "That's what your wife needs 3 times a week. The husband says, "Oh my, I can only bring her here on Thursdays." Well, I told you the story because lots of people have problems in their marriages, and their lack of understanding about their marital problems equates the lack of understanding of that particular man. Sometimes we just don't get it. I'm afraid that's all too common. Nearly every marriage starts out good, where almost every marriage has a good beginning. A young couple got married and left on their honeymoon. And when they got back, the bride immediately called her mother. "Well," said her mother, "how did your honeymoon go?" "Oh, Mama," she replied, "the honeymoon was wonderful. So romantic." Suddenly, she bursts out crying. "But Mom, as soon as we returned, Sam started using the most horrible language. Things I've never heard before. I mean, all these awful 4-letter words. You've got to come to get me and take me home, please, Mom." Sarah, her mother said, "Calm down. Tell me, what could be so awful? What 4-letter words? "Oh, please don't make me repeat these words, Mama," wept the daughter. "I'm so embarrassed. They're just too awful. Come, help me, please." "Darling baby, you must tell me, what are these words that have troubled you? Tell your mother these horrible 4-letter words. She's still sobbing, and the bride said, "Oh, Mom, words like dust, wash, iron, cook." The mother said, "I'll pick you up in 10 minutes. Most couples are deeply in love when they marry and find out so good is their love at the beginning, they think they could practically live on it. There's every intention to make love deep and lasting. And love is what ensures that every marriage starts out good. But sooner or later, every marriage has bumps there's difficult challenges that come. Things like financial strain and burdens related to children or inability to have children or serious illnesses, addictions that come to a family member. We cannot fully anticipate what is before us as a couple. What experiences in life that come our way that test a relationship to its very core. And often, love in itself is seldom enough to support a couple when they inevitably run into tough things. Love, while being a good catalyst for marriage, cannot sustain itself alone. Couples can have good marriages in spite of the bad things they've encountered. So allow me here this morning just to share with you what ingredients make a marriage successful as you face tough and challenging issues. What is a recipe for a strong marriage? I certainly know that this is a subject that cannot be covered here all in its entirety, but let me give you a few ingredients in a strong marriage. The first is ownership. A good marriage has the ingredient of 2 people who take ownership for the good as well as the bad. They are a responsible couple. Accepting responsibility is the substance on which success rests No one person is responsible for success unless he or she is willing to accept responsibility for failure as well. This is not only true in marriage, but it's true in business, and it's true of all of life. Think of Adam and Eve, the first couple. Adam and Eve are a glaring example of a couple who failed to own up and take responsibility for themselves and their relationship. Instead of responsible, they saw themselves as a victim. And after they had disobeyed God in the garden and sinned, when confronted by God, rather than owning up to their own responsibility, he said, "The woman you put here with me, she gave me some fruit from the tree." The feeling of a victim rather than being responsible. Listen to that. "The woman you put here with me." I'm sure that went over real big with Eve. I could hear her say, "What do you mean? I'm the one who was stuck with you. If you would not be so soft and undisciplined, you wouldn't have eaten from the tree. If you would just be a man, you are such a wimp." You can just almost hear Eve thinking in those terms. Then Eve excused herself, crying, "The devil made me do it." Just as it is in our own relationship with God, it doesn't work just coming with our laundry list of excuses and blame, but rather I must come to the Lord. I must come with the recognition of acknowledging that I have sinned, that I have come short of the glory of God. I have to give an account to Him for myself. It's important in our relationship with God. It's important in our relationship with our spouse, with others, that we assume responsibility, whether it be a friendship, a marriage, whatever, that we accept responsibility. Sure, in a long-term relationship, complete responsibility for a problem rarely rests entirely on the shoulders of one person. It takes two. Yet before there is ever any healing or health in a relationship, you must take responsibility for yourself and then be able to come together and not say who's wrong, but what's wrong, and work together to resolve the issue in your relationship. A number of you may be too young or unfamiliar with the movement that took place back in the early 90s, I believe, Promise Keepers, with Coach McCartney leading that charge with men. Stadiums around the country were filled with men as they came together to be challenged regarding a life with God and the responsibilities of a Promise Keeper. And Bill McCartney truly believed that his relationship with his wife Lindy was fine during that time. His commitment to both coaching another stellar season football at the University of Colorado, as well as building up this new ministry, provided the perfect camouflage for hypocrisy in his personal life. "It may sound unbelievable," he writes in his book Sold Out, "but while Promise Keepers was spiritually inspiring to my core, my hard-changing approach to the ministry was distracting me from being, in the truest sense, a promise keeper to my own family." McCartney points to two events that showed him he was out of touch and avoiding responsibility for the condition of his own marriage. One was a Promise Keeper rally where men were told to write down the number their wives would give their marriage if rating them on a scale of 1 to 10. He had to admit to the other men on the platform that Lindy would probably give their marriage a 6 or less. Then in the fall of 1994, McCartney heard a speaker make this pointed statement: "If you want to know about a man's character, then look into the face of his wife. Whatever he has invested or withheld from her will be reflected in her countenance." Something clicked in McCartney, and as he put it, he escorted his wounded wife out of the parking lot determined that rebuilding his marriage would require him to take some drastic measures. Shortly thereafter, Coach McCartney announced his retirement from the University of Colorado football team as coach to spend time with Lindy. To do so, he gave up a 10 years remaining on his large, lucrative contract and other major sources of income from endorsements that came from other major sources. Sports Illustrated called it un-American, what he did. McCartney called it taking responsibility for the state of his marriage. The single best day in every marriage is when two partners take responsibility for their part of the pie. This doesn't require anything as drastic, maybe, as quitting one's job, but it can be as scary. Taking ownership can expose many fears and other emotions we could otherwise deny. It's far easier to avoid responsibility for our problems by blaming someone else. But owning up to our part of the problem is the most powerful predictor of turning something bad into something good. When we say it's me, I'm responsible. Another ingredient in a recipe for a strong marriage is hopeful. A good marriage has the ingredient of two people believing good wins over bad. They are a hopeful couple. When a couple takes responsibility for the good as well as the bad in your relationship, hope is planted in the heart. It begins a root out of the negative and causes optimism to sprout. Hope keeps love alive. Stop hoping and marriages die. Our spirits were made for hope. Negative thinking is a luxury you cannot afford if you want to build a strong marriage. Negative thoughts cause hopes to die. Some lady a while back wrote to Ann Landers in response to a letter that was printed earlier. The letter was a complaint from a woman who had an unloving husband. She criticized him for many things he was not doing in their marriage. This woman responded to the letter and shared how she had developed such a negative and hopeless spirit with regard to her marriage. Her husband fell so far short in showing her the love she desired. He had bad manners. He was content to stay inside and did not do anything adventurous. But one day she started to see the positive qualities he had and started to concentrate on the character qualities he possessed. And her attitude toward her husband changed completely, and consequently the quality of her marriage improved also. The Apostle Paul had something to say about attitude. It has much to do with a disciplined thought life. And every one of us here are called to bring every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. But Paul wrote in Philippians 4:8, he said, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think or dwell on these things." A positive attitude can make a difference in your marriage. It can help you through difficult and challenging times. It can fill your heart with hope and cause you to believe that good can win over bad. Another ingredient necessary in the recipe for a strong marriage is empathy. A good marriage has the ingredient of two people walking in each other's shoes. They are an empathetic couple. I don't know of any of another quality that can do more for a marriage than empathy. That capacity to put yourself in your partner's shoes and see the world through her or his perspective. To imagine what life must be like lived in his or her skin. It's what poet Walt Whitman was getting at back in 1855 when he wrote his masterwork, Leaves of Grass. "I do not ask how the wounded one feels. I myself become the wounded one." Research has shown that 90% of our struggles in marriage would be resolved if we did nothing more than see that problem from our partner's perspective. Empathy comes from loving our partner with both our head and our heart concurrently. Most of us do one or the other pretty well. We either feel our partner's pain with our heart, or we try to resolve their problem with our head. I do pretty well trying to solve my wife's problems with my head, but I can often fall short of feeling her pain with my heart. To do both can be very challenging and tricky, but that's the change. But that is the change that happens within the gift of empathy. Granted, it is hard for us to put ourselves in our spouse's shoes. I don't wear high heels very well. She's a lady. I'm not. I think blue. She thinks pink. I listen. I hear blue. I don't hear pink. She's wired differently than I am. Men and women think differently. A woman told her husband after she woke up, "I just dreamed that you gave me a pearl necklace for our anniversary. What do you think it means that I dreamed that?" "You'll know tonight," he said. That evening, the man came home with a small package and gave it to his wife. Delighted, she opened it up to find a book entitled The Meaning of Dreams. Sometimes guys just don't get it. We don't get it. When we empathize with our partner, it brings more understanding. And understanding brings patience. And patience brings grace. And what marriage has an overabundance of grace? None that we know of. Fourthly, another ingredient is forgiveness. A good marriage has the ingredient of forgiveness. Two people healing the hurts they don't deserve. They are a forgiving couple. The failure to give or to receive forgiveness probably accounts for nearly every marriage that does not endure. Ruth Bell Graham describes a good marriage as the union of two forgivers. In a good marriage, two people help one another become better at forgiving by asking forgiveness when convicted, as well as by giving it when needed. "I'm sorry. Will you forgive me?" But oftentimes a scenario like this often plays out. "Where's my white shirt you said you'd pick up from the cleaners?" said the husband. "I never said I'd get your shirt." "I can't believe you. Don't pass the blame to me. It's your shirt." "Yes, but I asked you last night to pick it up for me. Why didn't you?" "You're crazy. We hardly even talked last night because you were at the game with Rick, remember?" "Oh, I get it. You don't pick up my shirt because you're mad about me going to the game." "Wait a second. Who's the one that gets mad if I'm not home to make dinner every night?" This inane dialogue can continue on and on, bleats on and on until at least one partner will say, "I'm sorry. Will you forgive me?" In the daily grind that is sometimes marriage, forgiveness keeps us moving forward. But for some agonizing couples, a devastating hurt, one that was completely undeserved and goes against God's moral grain, calls on forgiveness to do much more than that. Sometimes in a good marriage, a pain of betrayal of some kind is cut so deep that forgiveness is the only thing between this couple and their demise. Forgiveness is the last hope for the survival of their marriage. And that is exactly what forgiveness was designed to do, to heal the deepest wounds of our heart. Untold marriages have been saved by little more than forgiveness. Forgive one another. Ephesians 4:32 tells us, forgive one another just as God in Christ's sake has forgiven you. The most creative power in the soul of any marriage is the power to heal the hurts one didn't deserve. Forgiveness is healing for the guilty person and the one who has been wronged. And lastly, commitment. The last ingredient that I have to share with you this morning in the recipe for a strong marriage is commitment. A good marriage has the ingredient of two people living the love they promise. They are a committed couple. Commitment is becoming a rare quality in a modern married life. In this day of instant gratification, push-button appliances, disposable everything, we've come to view marriage like a disposable razor. If it gets dull, get rid of it. Not long ago, I read of a wedding ceremony performed on television that was a very traditional wedding in every aspect except one. The bride and groom were formally dressed. There were beautiful flowers. Family and friends were in attendance. Rings were exchanged. Vows were spoken, but with one minor variation. The bride and groom promised to love, cherish, honor, and sustain one another, but not as long as they both shall live, but rather as long as their love shall last. Just the change of one word makes a significant difference. Just one little letter changed the whole ceremony. But oh, what a difference that little letter makes, from as long as we both shall live to instead as long as we both shall love. What they were saying is this: our love is conditional. It's for now, but it may not be for always. We'll have to see how we feel about it down the road. If the day should come when we stop loving each other, the deal's off. The commitment is no longer binding if we don't feel love toward another. Commitment is what it takes to get through difficult times, dull times, dry times, hard times, devastating times. Commitment. Commitment. Admittedly, there are some circumstances that are more difficult to handle. Certainly, a spouse should not stay in a physically abusive relationship. Beatings and threats are a form of emotional blackmail from which a victim has to break free. I suggest physical separation, immediate counseling for the couple like that. Sometimes that kind of tough love represents the best possibility for a healthy and restored marriage. But Jesus went back to God's perfect and irrevocable design for marriage in Matthew 19:5, where it says, "A man shall cleave to his father and mother, and a mother shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they too shall become one flesh." The original word here for cleave is really glue. It literally means to be stuck together. Jesus said that a commitment as strong as super glue is what you need to have. Marriage means commitment. For a rewarding and fulfilling marriage that is built on Christ and commitment, it's a commitment to love your mate sacrificially. It's a commitment to learn how to love your mate. It's a commitment to change and adjust yourself in order to make your mate happy and to meet his or her needs. Commitment to keep working at it and keep working at it and keep working at it. God can help marriages. God designed the institution of marriage, and he knows best how to make it work. God can keep and help a couple stay together and find their marriage even blessed when life has a way of pulling us apart. Let's stand together.